now apparently I'm a Mooney. Seongjin Nim Moon. Pastor Sean.
My goodness. Please, please, folks. All glory to God. Thank you.
Wonderful. Next for the rifle. Switch it over to fire and pick out the group. Let go when you're ready.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners, the final episode on the Moon family and the Unification Church and its offshoots. Let's talk about a subject that should scare the hell out of all of us. A church of guns. A church of AR-15s. A church where their leader wears a crown of bullets and where congregants bring their AR-15s in to be blessed. They literally bring AR-15s to their own mass weddings as well. And they do so all under the direction of a man who says that if anyone is doing evil towards them, they will be shot, and they will be shot swiftly. Just one troubling statement shared during his Sunday morning sermons where the congregants are nodding in agreement in the audience. Terrifying. This is the final episode on Sun Young Moon and the Unification Church. But this episode is focused on the next generation, Moon's children, most notably Sean Young. The family drama, the scandals, the fallout after Moon's death, Hawk's takeover, and more. As you'll remember from last episode, Moon was the founder of the Washington Times, a very conservative newspaper, and he palled around with anyone who had very conservative values like him. Figures like President Ronald Reagan, the older George Bush, anyone who was willing to promote family values, do away with free sex, anyone into the war on drugs. And Reagan is a trip of his own. By the way, I'm not very political, but I have learned enough from researching these straight-laced dudes that frankly are some of the worst, but I digress. Okay, so Moon is mixing and mingling with conservative folk, preaching his family values, holding mass marriages for God. You know, doing the Lord's work. But behind the scenes, Mr. Moon was anything but saintly. Listen, people make mistakes, not great, but they do. The problem I have is with people who condemn others, profit off of their own perfection, but are doing the exact opposite. And Moon would fall into that category. According to an article posted on Mother Jones, who obtained an exclusive bombshell on this case, Moon had secrets of his own. While promoting wholesome family values, Moon was anything but. He was a bit of a dog who often stepped out on his teenage bride. Somewhere in the early 60s, Moon committed adultery, a huge no-no in most Christian-based religions, but essentially a slap in God's face and the foundation of Moon's ideology. In this particular adulterous relationship, the woman got pregnant and eventually gave birth to a son. This was bad PR for Moon, so he did everything in his power to hide his dirty secret. He was panicked naturally by this revelation, and he went into crisis control mode. Moon's right-hand man would do almost anything for him, and he was rewarded handsomely for it. His right-hand man, Bohai Pak, was also a founding member and former chairman of Moon's conservative newspaper, The Washington Times. Pak was so loyal to Moon that he took to raising this child as his own, hiding Moon's secret for him. And Moon, along with his mistress, Pak, Pak's own wife, and later their son Sam, went to great lengths to make sure the plan went accordingly. The mother of the young boy, now in his 50s, Sam Pak, an Arizona resident, never spoke about this before. In fact, he helped to hide his father's secret until eventually he began to speak on it. And he and his mother revealed Sun Young Moon's secret, but also his salacious secret past. You see, Sam Pak's mother and Moon's former mistress, Annie Choi, and when I say mistress, we are talking another literal child at the time of the affair, so for me it's hard to really call it anything other than predatory. Annie Choi was 17 at the time of her liaison with Moon, who allegedly, according to Annie Choi and some other early followers of Moon's, was essentially spiritually persuaded into having sex with Moon. In the Mother Jones article, Choi claimed what several early Moon followers have claimed, that Moon's church sort of began as a sex cult. Choi claims that young female followers, often brought in by their parents, were initiated by Moon into the church by having sex with Moon 3 times. Choi says that Moon also kept an on-demand group of young concubines known as the Six Marys. Choi was initiated into the group when she was just 17. In the article, she added that sometimes he would assemble them all in a circle and take turns having sex with them. She claimed he called this purifying them. Moon even convinced Choi's mother, an avid follower, to condone this, claiming that Moon told Choi's mother that their family was special and must play a special role in God's plan. Just like Jacob had, who married 2 women and had children by them and their handmaids. Moon would bury both of their daughters, and they would give birth to the world's first sin-free children. Choi's mother was in. She was so devoted to this vision that in 1954, she sold one of the family's homes and gave the proceeds to Moon. Choi claims that she stayed on as Moon's mistress until around 1964, 4 years after and during his marriage to Hawk John. When Choi discovered she was pregnant, Moon asked her to conceal her pregnancy, and his right-hand man, Bohai Pak, and his wife would pretend they were pregnant. Pak's wife allegedly stuffed her stomach area under her clothes with cloth diapers, mimicking pregnancy. And the day that Choi was set to give birth, Pak accompanied her to the hospital, claiming that she was his wife. The next day, Pak dropped Choi off to a cold, empty apartment after she gave birth to baby Sam, and Pak and his wife took the newborn home. Choi says later that day, Mrs. Pak, Pak's wife, took pity on Choi and went to her apartment and brought her seaweed soup. But according to Choi, she was so sad and heartbroken that she couldn't eat and just cried into the bowl of soup. And in another bizarre twist of fate, Injin, Moon's daughter, who would go on to have some scandals of her own, actually fell in love with Sam. They were teenagers, completely unaware that Sam was her half-brother. It was also around this time when Sam was 13 that he realized the doting aunt that would often visit him was actually his mom. And then to add insult to injury, in Sam's later years, Pak, Moon's right-hand man, came to Sam, his mother, and offered up a contract. As a sign of their, quote, mutual love, affection, and respect, it read, Sam, Choi, and Pak would release one another and the Moon family from any and all past, present, or future actions, including those arising from inheritance claims. In return, Sam and Choi would each receive $100. But that wasn't the only scandal to rock the family. Cut to the 1990s, and Moon is beginning to lay the groundwork for making sure his legacy and church become immortal. First order of business was introduce Hawk as an equal, a sort of co-messiah. She was now his equal, and also a savior of humanity. With the reins starting to be handed over to Hawk, Hawk then went on a tour, just as Moon had early in their marriage. She spoke at various political and social events, but wasn't quite prepared for the public scrutiny, as she didn't have the same unrelenting confidence of Moon. Still, Hawk knew money, and definitely didn't want to ever experience not having it. So with her taking the reins, she recognized that the mass weddings were the group's golden ticket. Instead of just Unification Church members, Hawk decided that any couple could get married under their blessing. And she did this in order to ramp up numbers and earnings, and while it made them more money, sometimes hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars per couple, it didn't really work to ramp up church membership though. I can't really understand this, why someone would choose to get married amongst a bunch of other people and spend money on it, even if you don't believe in this guru, is beyond me. I truly don't understand. I have, over the last 3 weeks, tried to like wrap my brain around this. Like, why would you pay someone you didn't believe in to have the least intimate ceremony of all time? But that's just my opinion. I don't get it. Anyways, I digress. So, Moon at this point decided to get the next generation involved, his kids, test the waters, and see which one of his perfect children would become his successor. Preston Moon would be the first to be appointed a high-ranking position. Preston, a Harvard graduate and accomplished equestrian, was appointed vice president of the Asian branch. But in 1998, another scandal would hit his family. They faced some very public bad PR. Moon's oldest son went through a very public divorce to Nan Suk Hong, a woman he married in 1982, who was only 15 at the time. A marriage arranged by his father, and a marriage that put a lot of pressure on the naive 15-year-old Nan Suk. Moon summoned her to essentially babysit and reform his wayward son. Hong would later recall that Moon had told her that she was brought to America to reform his son. She said Moon told her, should she fail, she would be failing God. But as it turns out, keeping his son in line was not an easy task. In her tell-all book after the divorce, In the Shadow of the Moons, Nan tells of the 14 years she spent married to Steve and living amongst the Moon clan. She lived in an opulent estate, but behind closed doors, she alleges that her husband was a cocaine addict, a sex addict, had multiple affairs, and abused her both emotionally and physically. She also called her former father-in-law a con man, and during her press tour for the book, she exposed many more family secrets and dysfunction. Divorce was obviously a huge no-no in the Unification Church, despite the fact that Moon himself had a divorce early in his guru career. But to handle this scandal, Moon just sort of brushed the scandal under the rug, as well as the allegations, and he asked his followers to pray for his son and to forgive his former daughter-in-law for her accusations. But it still left a stain on the reputation of the perfect family. And with that book came a press tour. Here you can hear Nan Suk speak for herself about this.
He needed cash. He went to his mom, and his mom would give him from $1,000 up to $50,000 and some
from
more.
From $1,000 to $50,000?
Yes, depends. Depends what he asks and what kind of mood the parents are in.
Where did all this cash come from?
I believe mainly it's coming from Japan. When Japanese leaders come in, they bring cash in, and basically they give to Reverend and Mrs. Moon.
And how would his son use those church donations?
He basically used for his cocaine, his party, his waitress, well, hostess, bar hopping, all the fun thing that a person can do.
Those fun things apparently included mistresses. Hyojin told her he was entitled to have affairs because his father had had them. And she says Reverend Moon himself confirmed to her that he had had affairs, but the Reverend told her that God wanted him to.
He told me in person that he called it providential affairs.
Providential affairs?
Providential affairs.
What is
it? Providential means it's God's mission. So he had to have these affairs, extramarital affairs, because it was providential. It was God's mission that he had to fulfill.
Of course, Reverend Moon does not tell his followers about that part of God's mission. Instead, he preaches that adultery is a major sin.
Took his cocaine, I tried to flush it down the toilet, and that's when it started punching. And I did get black eyes, and I got bloody nose, and but the big fear was that he kept saying he's gonna kill the baby.
You were carrying?
I was carrying. I was seven months pregnant. I was pretty big. And he kept saying, I'm going to kill the baby. I'm going to kill the baby. And that's the worst fear I had. He might punch and then something would happen.
Whenever she told Reverend and Mrs. Moon about the beatings, Nan Suk says they blamed her.
I was not an ideal wife for Hyojin. That's why Hyojin behaved a certain way toward me. And I wasn't a good member of their family. So also it was my fate.
Who told you that, Mrs. Moon?
Both of them, yes.
Moon's daughter, Injin, now wanted in on the family action. After an embarrassing debacle that involved Hunter Biden and a disastrous business venture in which her brother Preston had to bail her and her husband out of it, Yinjin wanted cash, and she wanted notoriety of her own, fame, and control. She was appointed to take over the American branch of the church, and take over she did. Not very successfully, but she certainly did it with flair. She modeled her new church, her sermons, and her vibes after the mega churches of mainstream American Christianity, with Christian rock music, lights, and the excess of a Vegas show. On one of her broadcast sermons, where she was announced as the CEO of the American branch, wearing pink lipstick and heavy foundation, Injin announced herself to her new American audience. And she did so with a fake British accent she had put on as her new persona, which is very cringy, honestly. I mean, she grew up in America, was schooled in America, Harvard educated, and as well as my knowledge can gather, I don't even know if she ever even spent a full week in England, but hey, you do you, girl. I like the fake British accent. I mean, that is a commitment. On stage, she would point to her Liberace piano, a rhinestone-encrusted grand piano modeled after Liberace. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised with that family's wealth if it wasn't formerly owned by Liberace himself. She claims her fascination with Liberace came when she would attend Vegas shows as a kid. She said he had glorious capes. Some were rhinestones, some were velvet, and they all had different textures. And she would take this on as her goal, as the new American figurehead. It was to appeal to young people, be flashy, who she said were dying to join. Odd, because according to church documents, the attendance ramped up at first, but then plummeted, from 26,000 when she began to less than 7,500. But she did it, and she did it big. Despite the elder members being more traditional and frankly sexist, not wanting a young woman to be at the head, but she forged on. Some of her restructuring included allowing couples to choose who they wanted to marry instead of arranging their marriages. She changed the name of the church to Loving Life Ministries. And she threw out the old hymn books and had an in-house rock band. Gone were the days of Korean traditions like bows in your hair and chanting. Her church would be cool. She'd host Guitar Hero parties, open mics, concerts, and ping pong tournaments. She was all flash and show. And Injin, too, couldn't help her wandering eye. During her reign as American figurehead, Injin began having an affair with one of her congregants, Ben Lawrenson, and ended up having a child with him outside of her marriage. Ben's own wife discovered the affair when she borrowed his laptop and found sexually explicit messages from Injin. When she confronted her husband via email, she said he showed up to the hotel they were staying at together, and him and another man told her that her and her two children needed to be out of the hotel by morning, or they would be forced out. It should be noted, they were also his two children. A year later, Injin and Ben got married, though. Her mother did not approve of this and released a statement saying, "True mother did not give her blessing or her consent, and rather sought to dissuade the couple from going through with their plan." She also encouraged Injin to just disappear. True mother was mortified. Then in 2012, at the age of 92, her husband, Sungjeon Moon, passed away, and Hawk was left to manage the church and her wayward family on her own. And True Mother was about to be confronted with her biggest challenge yet, her son, Sean Moon. In 2012, after his father's death, everyone thought his youngest son, Sean, would be the likely next successor to his father's empire. He was one of his father's favorites, after all. But Hawk was fed up with not having control over her empire and the zero control she had over her children. Her spoiled brood were entitled, and that was partially her fault, but she had had enough. Her kids had grown up being treated like royalty by all of the members of the church, But Sean claims his parents were too busy to give him the attention and love he needed. He claims he sometimes only saw them a few weeks out of an entire year. That need for attention, mixed with a spoiled upbringing and adoration from his father's church members, put him in the perfect position to seek attention and love elsewhere. After attending Harvard, where he studied religion and getting a master's in theology, he returned from college and he became the president of the church. But after his father died, things changed. Hawk wanted all of the control and all of the money. According to Sean, Hawk said to Sean's face that she was God and she would make any and all decisions. She began pushing her son further and further away, barring him from church and family activities. But then, about a year after his father's death, Sean tried to patch things up with his mom. And according to him, he showed up outside a church event to try and speak to his mom. But she flatly denied him. And he claims she had him escorted off the property by security. Sean was not one to back down, though. Instead of slinking away, he would start his own church. He would defy his mother and change the way things were done. And that he did. Pastor Sean, also known as Second King, a title he gave himself, started one of the most bizarre and alarming churches or church concepts I've ever heard of. The Rod of Iron Ministries. What started out as a fairly normal, church concept took a drastic left turn in 2017. Sean partnered with his brother Justin, setting up the church in Pennsylvania, where Justin was already living and operating a business. The church model? Sean would be the face, the figurehead, the God. And Justin would provide the guns. Yeah. Sean would be the second king, the pastor, and Justin would provide the guns. A sort of silent partner. You heard me right. That's the business model. Justin was a gun enthusiast, and this started when he was younger. He borrowed $5 million from his dad to start a gun manufacturing company. And this was music to Sean's ears, who apparently had become a gun enthusiast himself, or maybe just wanted to have a unique marketing pitch for his church. And whether or not he believes what he preaches, he is all in. The Rod of Iron Ministries is intense. On February 18th, 2018, 4 days after the Parkland school shooting, Pastor Sean officiated a blessing ceremony at his church where he asked his followers, urged them to bring semi-automatic rifles to church to be blessed.
We're gathered here today to celebrate the cosmic true parents of heaven, earth, and humanity. We'll ask everyone to take out your rod of iron. Today's ceremony is a blessing marriage for couples have been asked to attend with crowns and AR-15 rifles as religious accoutrements.
If the right to keep and bear arms is a natural right, like our framers stated, then it is a human right, and all human beings should have the right of self-defense against tyranny.
The rifle symbolizes just the general arts of self-defense. For us, that's the shepherd's role. The shepherd is a defender of the sheep, is a defender of those who cannot defend themselves. And so the shepherd must be armed and the shepherd must be trained. Second Amendment supporting, our brothers and sisters, a lot of them came from different parts of the world. So we have people that are not associated with our church at all, from different states like Tennessee, Missouri, folks from New Jersey who feel the erosion of their Second Amendment rights.
Thank you all for coming out and supporting us. I think our biggest thing coming up in the next election is get your friends out to vote.
We need to have a pro-gun president. We need to have a pro-gun Congress.
And he's even got a podcast called the Rod of Iron Kingdom Podcast. In the Vice documentary, he goes on to host a recording session at 5 a.m. And the host of the Vice documentary enters the living room where the people hanging out there, I think maybe likely relatives, are all wearing crowns. And she hilariously is like, oh, you guys look really nice. It's so hilariously awkward. But Sean also kind of seems like a nice guy. It's so strange to me to see kindness in someone while they're also spewing out and teaching such violence.
God of iron, the equalizer of force. Fire. What is a firearm? It's fire, the power of fire. What is the rule of iron? Rod of iron. It is fire power.
In a 2023 speech, he was introduced as King Bullethead. King Bullethead. The escalation is making me so nervous and frankly offended for people who have been victims or family members who have been victims of gun violence. Like, this isn't cute. King Bullethead is not a cute thing. And having your congregants wear crowns of bullets and carrying AR-15s seems like a Waco waiting to happen. Sure. I guess maybe having a small handgun for protection, you know, but what does one need an assault rifle for? What goddamn point does it serve besides mass killings? Or, I don't know. Again, I'm not political, but it's, if you see these videos and these photos, there's photos of his wife and other women in the church, like in bridal gowns or, you know, like prom gowns, like posing with AR-15s. It's just really chilling. And to be marketing this on a Sunday to children who are so, like, they're like sponges susceptible to this, who might be going through their own hard time, their own, maybe not mental illness, but like, you know, like teenagers have depression and shit. They're mad at stuff. And by spewing this hate and just like, get guns because everyone's evil and you got to protect yourself, it's really, really treacherous. Here's a clip of Second King or Pastor Sean speaking in this way that just, it might just be the way he's saying it and the way he's like pushing that like everyone is out to get you that really scares me.
A citizenry needs to have weapons that can tear people up, because if the government gets crazy and freaking tyrannical and sends people to kill you, you have to be able to have the force and the threat of tearing those people up.
If there is a situation where they feel that they're under...
It appears he's fear-mongering his followers into thinking there's a constant evil out there trying to get them, which there are a lot of bad people out there. But he claims like the biggest evil, it appears, is the government. But he also speaks of a cabal, a mafia out there to get his followers, all likely in an attempt to get them to be under his control. Like, it's very culty, allegedly. Apologize, Second King, Pastor Sean. Because at certain points, I actually think he seems very likable, and I get some of his points. But what he's doing is very scary for people that don't realize what's happening. I don't know. Greg, what do you think? It's very weird because at certain points, like, he doesn't seem like an evil dude, but he's, like, speaking such vitriol and such dangerous rhetoric that I just don't know. Okay. It's very similar to last episode where I said I had to call my friend over slash neighbor to like watch the documentary with me because I was like, am I seeing what I'm seeing? Am I seeing gals in, you know, wedding dresses and guys in suits holding AR-15s in a church? Oh, what am I watching? I need to know I've not gone insane. And so similar to that, I need to know. At the end of this episode right now, well, I'd love to know what you guys think. Please message me on, you know, 7deadlysinnerspodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram at 7deadlysinnerspodcast. But Greg, what do you think?
Well, I personally don't have a problem with owning an assault rifle, a high-powered, high-speed rifle. I think it's your American right, but very much, you know, separate, you know, keep church and state separate. I think it's a legal matter. And that's where I think things get really muddy and cloudy. What I don't agree with is making owning a firearm a religious requirement.
Yeah, they were literally called to, 4 days after the Parkland shooting, bring their assault rifles or their weapons, whatever. I don't know if he, like...
Their rods of iron.
Yeah, essentially.
to church to be blessed 4 days afterwards. It's just like a... It feels insensitive, and it also feels to me like, again, like I've said, I'm not super political, and this is very uncomfortable for me to talk about. I believe that everyone should have the opportunity to defend themselves, but I personally don't understand the need for, like, an automatic weapon or, like if someone's breaking into your home, can't you just, like, pull out a handgun? Like, I don't know guns as well as you or other people do, but point being, requiring or encouraging your followers, which includes little kids that could be then teenagers going through like depression and anger and stuff and could be influenced by the anger of this leader to just like think everyone's out to get them. Like certainly there's a ton of bad people in this world. That's all we cover on this podcast. But encouraging like you got to be prepared. You got to defend your kingdom is, I don't know.
He's inciting violence. It feels very much like he's inciting violence. It's less about protection. It's less about protection and much more about being power hungry.
Thank you for saying that. I want to give you a high five. That is the words I could not figure out how to say. He's inciting violence. Give me a high five. That's what scares me about it. It's inciting anger, paranoia, and violence in people.
And he doesn't seem, like you said, he kind of seems like a likable guy. Like he doesn't seem nice. Like he's even angry. It's almost like, you know, as you mentioned, his brother owns these guns they're buying. Like, it's almost like he's getting high, getting off on, like, the marketing power and the sales. Because, like, he doesn't seem like an angry guy, but he gets fired up like he's just selling AR-15s just right out the door. Something about it is very strange. You know, coupled with his personality, like Alex Jones, I understand that guy's angry. That guy's mean. This dude does not seem like he's got a vendetta, but suddenly.
I really need to look into Alex Jones. I was just actually, when I was researching this episode, like Alex Jones came up and I was like, I know I've heard the name, but I don't really know that much about him. Anyways, that's a side topic, but like, yeah. I think that.
He's got a podcast and he just screams into a mic basically about, you know, similar conservative issues, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this guy, Sean Moon, also, he was within a tear gas shot at the insurrection, is that how you say it? When they tried to, you know, storm the Capitol on in January of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
January 6th, they stormed the Capitol.
Yeah. He was all about that, too. Again, not political, but there's just something, like, I think personally, Sean Moon seems like a wounded kid that was also very spoiled. In my opinion, his dad was a billionaire. His parents were like the true mother and father of humanity. Granted, they never really hit it big in America, but he is a kid and his other like 14 to 16 siblings, which you didn't know half of them at a certain point, or two of them. I think they were so... They had so much adoration. They were so spoiled. It's like picturing, like, give Paris Hilton a automatic rifle or, like, say, like, you're the heir to a church. It's like a rich kid with power, essentially. Not that Paris Hilton's parents, like, ran a church or anything, but I'm just saying, like, think about, like, what you think of, you know, trust fund kids, rich kids that have been ignored by their parents a lot too, though. Like, he said he only saw his parents a couple weeks out of the year at a certain point. Yet, his dad's followers were, they treated him like he was a god. Like, he was like a little prince. So, couple being treated like, oh, you're the best thing in the world, with also being ignored, that's going to kind of make a person that needs a lot of attention is going to create a scenario in which that attention is going to be big.
I think it's less about his inner child and more that he's strategically taken the formula from his father and what he learned being raised in that family to make a great marketable church to an audience that he knows exists. Gun lovers, conservatives. He knows that he's going to get people not only buying his brother's guns now, but following him and getting behind this ideology. It's in your face, I'll give you that, but I don't think it's from coming from a place of a wounded child. I think it's coming from a place of a fat wallet, and that's what he's after.
A fat wallet. I've never heard that before. But I think you are right. I think it's a combo. I think he learned from the greats, including his parents, where follow the money. His brother, his dad loaned him $5 million to start a gun factory. Okay. That was already in the money, right?
How do you sell guns? Make a gun church.
Yeah. Make a gun church. And they know churches. So we're going gun factory. That's already working. Justin wasn't super into religion, but he was into money. Sean was kind of into religion, but also very much into money and power.
I think he might want the attention by being the face of the church, and that might come from his lack of attention as a child. I'll give you that. But this formula just seems too simple. It lacks spirituality. It's just like they're using the Bible as an easy device to pull out the keywords that they want to justify their ideology, and their ideology, in my opinion, only seems to stand for selling guns. Like, you gotta have a gun to even go to church. If you're gonna get married in this church, you gotta have a gun by your side. You gotta sell more guns, more bullets. And I'm certain that they're selling their own brand of guns.
Oh, certainly. What's weird, too, is that, they've... Okay, but I still also go back to, power corrupts power, whatever.
Absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Yeah, that he knew as a kid he would be the second king or whatever. He had the ego that his father and mother, implanted into him, essentially, and his environment did. And he also was relentlessly ambitious like his dad. They don't have shame. I could never go on YouTube like Sean Young does with a crown of bullets on and not start laughing at myself. There's no way in my entire body, and maybe I'm a pussy, who knows, but the fact that he can just look at his followers straight faced and they nod at him in adoration. They even say obviously a king has a kingdom, and he's going to have a kingdom on earth. We're not waiting. This is an actual quote from the Vice documentary. We're not waiting until we get to heaven to have a kingdom. We're creating a kingdom on earth with Second King Sean. Okay? And the lady's like, okay. So this is not that crazy. And if you're going to have a kingdom, you need a means to defend that kingdom. The ideology they believe is just guns are absolutely necessary. We're at attack at all times.
I just have to say that a crown of bullets is cheesy even for a warlord. Even for someone who's actually daily killing people, a crown of bullets is kind of a cheesy wardrobe choice. El Chapo, Pablo Escobar, I never saw them with a crown of bullets. I feel a kingdom to... where's your castle?
Yeah, where's the castle?
Where's the walls?
I will say something funny, though, that based on what you're just saying, though, it is kind of cheesy, but this is, the part, that makes him a little bit likable, is I think he knows he's cheesy, so in...
I agree.
Either the Vice documentary, or the A&E one, I can't remember, the woman shows up and is like, oh, I like your getup, whatever, and he's like... Yeah, this suit I got off on eBay. He seems almost a little embarrassed. There's shame or something involved. I can't quite describe it. He's a complicated mixture of pomp and
sales tactics.
Yeah.
I think it's just one big sales plan, big sales pitch.
People like this are fascinating to me, though. That's why I liked that book, The Art of the Con. And I've referenced it many times on the podcast, where it's if you kind of master the art of the con, you can really con anyone. It just has to be do you have the stomach or the heart for it? I don't personally have the heart or the stomach for it. I'm the first one to be hey, yep, I lied, bye.
Yeah. It's weird how the gun ownership totally overrides all the other, you know, beatitudes of the Bible. Like, we, you know, if you, the whole point of having a kingdom is to like have peace on earth and joy and love and yes, protection. But if you're so protection first, you lose sight of all of the other things. And it's just weird, like, that anyone could belong to this religion. It just seems so backwards. It's just like it's founded on violence, or the idea that violence is coming, and that's stressful. Like, to believe in what they're preaching is stressful. It's not peaceful. There's nothing to protect. That's the thing. I mean, like,
I actually have a good final question for you, though, to see, because as you're speaking, it makes me think. What do you think his motive is?
Money.
Okay, well, I was going to give you two scenarios, okay? Because I was going to say money because it involves his brother's gun thingy, or control because he knows that there's a certain faction of America that, you know, will fall for that sort of rhetoric. Like, okay, so you think it's money more than power and control? Or all of the above?
I think it's a cocktail of both. I think it's money first.
A Molotov cocktail?
And and power and attention second. But nowhere in there is it spiritual.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we've talked about this before on the podcast. And I can't remember. I was trying to think of this like 10 minutes prior when we were talking. The term for when people and spiritual leaders pick and choose. So they'll take like a passage from the Bible, but then they'll interpret it in their own way. There's a specific term for it. Do you remember what that is? Okay, well, there's, I wonder. I can look it up.
Manipulation?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's basically that, but there's like a very specific term. It doesn't fucking matter, but it does feel like he bases the Rod of Iron ministries off of the Book of Revelations, which a lot of people like Charles Manson and others have based their ideology off of the Book of Revelations because that's like the most like damning, scary, yeah, sort
fire
of
fire and brimstone. It's the wrath of God.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, there is that. There is the power of God Almighty if you're going to fully have faith and believe. But it's like you can't the biggest problem with all of those religions, all the doomsday religions, they start in the last chapter.
they're pick and choosing.
They start at the end.
This'll,
you know,
work for me.
It's a good horror movie.
That's how I feel about when I end a bag of chips. I'm just like, I mean, I only ate the rest of it. I mean, I didn't necessarily eat the first 3/4 of the bag, you know?
Your revelation?
Yeah, yeah. It's convincing yourself of something that's like, it's creating your own narrative and convincing other people of the narrative that you want them to believe.
Well, it's the most effective chapter of the Bible to scare people into believing that the end is near.
The end is nigh.
Which is, a great cult tactic. The second coming or Armageddon, you know, it's just around the corner. So people are like, well, shit, I better get good soon. And you're the only one with the knowledge. You know, it's,
I gotta spend my money on a bunker. Like, honestly, if the world ends, I'm all set. I just want to take a nap. Well, Greg, I loved your opinion.
Newsflash, the world is not ending.
Yeah.
And even at long after we are gone, the world will still exist.
Yeah.
Whether it's a ball of dust and ash.
Yeah.
There will be microbes and bacteria that'll slowly build back up.
Hilarious, because that's one of my favorite Jackbox questions. Do you guys do Jackbox TV?
Jackbox TV.
One of them is like, what will be standing once the world's just like a, whatever, the universe is just, you know, ash and dust or whatever? And that was a fun question to answer. And I think I maybe said Hunter's Ranch.
It will.
Yeah.
It'll still be here.
Or you guys.
At least our container home and the slab of concrete we poured under it will still be here.
But regardless, hey, I love you guys. Sorry if this was like a weird political discussion, but it was honestly like I entered into researching the Moonies just like, all right, it's like culty and kind of political, whatever. And then when I hit on Sean Moon, I was like, oh, I like wanted to crawl under a bed and just hide. I was like, this is getting very strange. So I wanted Greg to help me discuss it. And
get yourself a gun. Get yourself a couple guns. Go to a gun show. Buy a fully automatic weapon. Just don't tell me that the Bible told you to. That's all I say.
My opinion is just be annoying like I am. That is the same as a gun. If someone kidnaps you and you have the personality of Rachel O'Brien, that's the same as an assault rifle. All right?
Assaulting.
Yes. Have the personality
assault
of Rachel.
Assault Rachel. I got an assault Rachel.
Yeah. Just be annoying. All right.
She gets me free upgrades and gets me out of things all the time. And just sick my wife on.
I embarrass him constantly. Constantly, he's like, please stop saying that. I'm like, were you in a prison gig? He's like, stop talking. All right. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.